Did you ever think that I would open up an episode of Wednesday Night Dynamite talking about Dana Brooke? Oh, we have to talk about it. Unfiltered, uncensored, unbiased. I'm recording this Wednesday afternoon, June 21st, 2023, less than 24 hours after night one of NXT Gold Rush. And I witnessed, in my opinion, the worst televised NXT segment that I have seen in years. And that is not an exaggeration. And it, yes, it involves Dana Brooke. Is she completely at fault of what went down yesterday? No. And we'll explain why. But if you know what went down yesterday and you follow social media today, you know that there is a mild push by, you know, Dana Brooke supporters, snowflakes, where everything triggers them if, you know, if you act a certain way. And the one popular viewpoint that is going around today is, how could that live NXT audience be so awful, disgusting, booing, hissing, insulting, and making fun of Dana Brooke when everybody thought that she blew out her knee? Now, if you ever watch indie wrestling, even garbage indie wrestling, if you watch regular professional wrestling on TV, even if it's someone that is not very good or not very liked or someone that just hasn't clicked, if there is an injury, most fans at the end, when the person is carted out, they will give a round of applause. They are very, very polite about it. They wish the person, you know, get back to good health. You know, injuries suck. You always get that mild, positive reaction, showing support. Instead, on Tuesday night, June 20th, 2023, when Dana Brooke was on a stretcher, the crowd, instead of giving a mild round of applause, she was greeted with, na, 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 hey, 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 goodbye. Now, today, a lot of people very angry, irate over that audience. Now, anybody who tunes into my shows know that I have friends that work within NXT behind the scenes, and I have friends of individuals who go to NXT on a weekly basis that live in the Orlando area. So today, I talked to four different people, two fans, two that work in the office, and I asked them all, you know, the deal about Dana Brooke. And, you know, the people who work within WWE, you know, it's a little bit more, you know, I don't want to say politically correct, but supportive of Dana Brooke. But the two individuals that were live there yesterday, and when I say this, it pretty much just kills all this emotion online right now about the fans' treatment of Dana Brooke Tuesday night. I asked these two fans, who don't know each other, by the way, they do not, and I said, hey, why was the crowd so vicious against Dana Brooke yesterday? You know, for a little while, we thought maybe she legit blew out her knee, and you watched the replay, it looked like she legitimately twisted her knee, and I got the same answer from both of them, and these two individuals said, hey, DT, we knew it was bullshit because the referee never stopped the match, never rang the bell, never awarded the victory, referee stoppage. They never stopped the match. So while we are in a 3-minute commercial break, before the commercial break, during the commercial break, after the commercial break, we had 6 to 7 minutes of Dana Brooke having trainers put a brace on her knee, put her on a stretcher, put a brace while she's on a stretcher. The referee never called for the bell. These two individuals said that everybody there knew that it was bullshit. That's why they acted the way they acted, because they didn't like the segment. It went way too long. They knew that it was all a rouge. And sure enough, Dana Brooke pops up out of the chair, thinking that she's hulking up, slaps Cora Jade in the face, charges back to the ring. Oh, I almost forgot. My knee's supposed to be blown out. So when you see this reaction online, understand that the people live in the audience are not as dumb as you think that they are. They're pretty smart. And anytime there's an injury, the match stops immediately. I mean, you know, if it's a serious injury, and as we saw yesterday, they played off as a serious injury. So I'm giving you right off the bat the reason why the crowd did what they did yesterday. For anybody out there that did not see the segment, and why am I calling it the worst televised NXT segment I've seen in years? And look, it's nothing personal against Dana Brooke. I wish her the best, but I'm a wrestling fan, and my objective is to be entertained. And when you see someone employed for that many years that really does not cut it, you know, and the only argument people make is she's been working hard and she's, you know, never given that chance and it's my time, it's my time, it's my time. No, for some people, it's never their time. And no matter how hard Dana Brooke trains, works out, tries, no matter how good her outfits look, no matter how in shape she looks, you know, no matter how much she looks like a professional wrestler, unfortunately for some people, it just never gets put together to a main roster level. You know, this is not a small indie promotion with TV. This is World Wrestling Entertainment. And you always feel that, okay, people should receive an ample amount of time to grow, to adapt, to try to work things out. And it gets to a point where you could keep throwing shit on the wall and trying and trying and trying, and you want to give someone an opportunity and you want to be fair and you want to do this. And it gets to a come to Jesus moment where you got to say, look, man, I mean, how many years? I mean, we could approach a decade of mediocrity. I mean, it gets to a point where you kind of like find it a little bit baffling, like why someone is almost Teflon. And I don't want to see her fired, but when people out there see what they see yesterday, and it goes on for 7 painful minutes, you understand why, okay, you know, this is it. And I feel bad for her because she takes things very, very personal. She went on social media this morning, you know, addressing everyone. Okay, I get it. You all don't like me. I get it. Okay, and this. And she's very hurt. And I feel bad for her. Unfortunately, that doesn't suddenly give her the ability that she's going to flow in the ring. She's definitely wrestles average. But in my opinion, she's not a WWE superstar. And she's not even on the level of an NXT superstar. And we have witnessed that the last 2 weeks. And yesterday on NXT, just to summarize it, she had a match with Cora Jade. Cora Jade was whipped into the corner, and Dana Brooke, doing some gymnastics, plays off that she blew out her knee. And the referee is holding back Cora Jade. He calls out the trainers. Trainers are examining her. And Dana Brooke, out, 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 out. No tears, no makeup dripping down her face, trying to sell that she's injured. The fans are not stupid. The match was never stopped. You know, they know that this is just a skit. And they're watching it, and it's going 1 minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes, 4 minutes. They put a brace on her. Cora Jade is mocking Dana Brooke the entire time. They bring out a stretcher. They're gingerly putting her on a stretcher. We got pitcher in pitcher. They put another brace on her. Cora Jade is still mocking her. Referee still hasn't called for the bell. And then the trainers start. They begin to wheel her to the back, and Cora Jade is walking right along with them, mocking Dana Brooke, and Dana Brooke is, you know, get out of my face, and this is that. And then Dana Brooke pops up out of the stretcher and literally pushes the brace, and miraculously, it was like Hercules. Like if Hercules is tied with a whole bunch of rope and he just flexes and all the ropes snap, she literally popped up and the fucking brace flew off. Didn't unstrap, didn't you real? And she goes to the ring and she's half selling it and not half selling it. And I brought this up on Patreon yesterday. You know, I did go to wrestling school for 9 months, was not good at it. And there are certain things that they train you to do and this and that. in different, you know, matches. And I witnessed other people who were going to have like specialty matches and they were training, trying to do this. I used to be in the building hours before any indie show would go on. You see guys working out in the ring, doing spots, doing this, doing that, somebody doing an injury angle. And this is what they're going to do. And this is how they're going to play off. Not because CM Punk is back, but the two examples I brought up yesterday on Patreon was CM Punk and Kevin Owens. If you ever watch any of their matches, when somebody works on their leg, they will sell the leg beautifully. Doesn't matter how long they're in the match, they will continue to hop around, sell the leg, and they really make people, suspension of disbelief, believe that the leg is injured, even though you know it's not. It was pretty obvious yesterday that Dana Brooke did not practice, you know, how to maneuver in a match only on one leg, selling an injury angle. And she was trying to do moves to Cora Jade yesterday where you got to push off with your leg. Now, me, I'm right-handed. So a lot of things I do with my right hand. Yeah, I know it sounds a little bit wrong, but hey, I do a lot of things with my right hand. Now, if I'm going to pretend that my right hand is sprained, broken, and I can't use it, you know, I have to practice, you know, to make it believable that I could do something with my left hand. Now, Dana Brooke, she's selling that, you know, her leg is incapacitated. And she, it's obviously her good leg, you know, the dominant leg. So when she's trying to execute moves against Dana, against Cora Jade, she's not pushing off on the other leg. She's getting confused and getting caught. And it was just horrendous. And the worst part about it is Cora Jade puts on a leg lock, you know, on, you know, almost like a single crab. And Dana Brooke never taps out. And the referee stops the match, calls for a referee stoppage to try to play off that Dana Brooke is so tough that she refused to give up. And the referee made the call to end the match. The crowd hated it. They cheered Cora Jade the entire time. When the match was over, they booed the shit out of the result. And again, when people online are calling fans vicious who were there live, tormenting Dana Brooke, they didn't believe that her knee was blown out. The people online that are complaining believed that her knee was blown out. And I'm not mocking anybody who believed it. I thought Dana Brooke, you know, in the beginning, if it would have just went to commercial, you know, not picture in picture, you bring it to the back within a minute or two, and that's the end of it, okay. I really would have believed that she blew out a leg. But when you see them just eating time and Dana keeps yelling at Cora Jade, and it got, like I said, it goes 2 minutes, 3 minutes, 4 minutes, 5 minutes, and the match is still going, I'm like, oh, this is fucking awful. And Dana Brooke did not do a great job in selling it when she went back in. When she popped up and then literally like skipped to the ring, but not, oh, it was awful. Now, I blame WWE for a good part of this because, number one, the referee could have stopped the match and then restarted it. You know, Dana Brooke could have begged the ref, please restart the match, restart the match. I think that would have been better. If they would have called the bell immediately, I think it would have helped the segment yesterday. The second thing is it went way too fucking long. They literally, you know, spent 2 minutes before the commercial break. And then you got the commercial break. And then we come back from commercial and they're still working on her. It was horrendous. It was legitimately one of the worst, if not worst, televised NXT segment I have seen in years. And I have always come up here and said, NXT is developmental. So you got to give the younger upcoming wrestlers a break. You look a year ago, Tiffany Stratton, nowhere near the ability that she has now. You look at Lash Legend, who still has a long way to go, but compared to a year ago, tremendously better. You're seeing wrestlers, Tony D'Angelo. Yeah, Tony D'Angelo a year ago only had a couple of matches in his entire pro wrestling career. So, yes, NXT, we are witnessing people who weren't even in the pro wrestling business learning and training and growing and developing and improving right before our very eyes. Just like when you follow minor league sports team, you will get people coming out of college and they have to get used to minor league pitching, some major leaguers who have to go back to the minor leagues to practice. Thing is that when you have a major league baseball player, for example, who is stinking up the joint on the major league team, and he gets sent down to the minor leagues, and he is sucking it up in the minor leagues, the fans aren't going to go for it. It's a difference when you see someone who starts with no ability and develops and trains and grows, and you're witnessing and watching it and appreciating it. And then you see someone who has been given opportunity after opportunity. Maybe it might not be perceived as much compared to others out there. That's because every time she was given an opportunity, you know, it just didn't click. She's not WWE material. Maybe as an ambassador, maybe working behind the scenes, maybe doing other things. But as far as a women's wrestler on the grandest stage of them all, I personally think after all these years, no. I don't think it's going to get better. And I see people today, oh, man, turn her heel. She'd be an amazing heel. Based on what? Even if she is nasty and she could really cut an amazing heel promo, that doesn't suddenly give her the great timing that you need in a wrestling ring. That doesn't mean that she could suddenly flow and do moves. When it's a one-sided match, even when you go back to the 70s and the 80s and you watch some old TV, when I first became a wrestling fan, and it's, you know, mainstream stars versus what they called at the time jobbers. When the mainstream star gets to do everything, and the jobber's role is to just bump, 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 of course that star is going to look like a tremendous star. But when you have to go back and forth, and now it's, you know, pretty even, now you have to show that you could not only give offense, but take offense and have defense and tell a story. And I just personally thought it was awful yesterday. Terrible. So, before we talk quickly about NXT Gold Rush Night 1 results, because there was a couple of things that were really, really good on the show. Seth Rollins and Bron Breakker was excellent. Pay-per-view quality, no. Premium live event quality, no. But above NXT standards, absolutely. You know, even, you know, Seth Rollins taking a beautiful frog splash onto Bron Breakker through the announcer's table towards the latter part of the match. And remember, in storyline, he's selling a rib injury thanks to Finn Balor with the trifecta of coup de grace on Monday's Raw. And by the way, Finn Balor did make an appearance on NXT, attacked Seth Rollins once again. And in a matter of 7 days, they have made the Finn Balor-Seth Rollins feud one of the more entertaining, enjoyable, and in a feud that you would invest in. I think we all agree that Seth Rollins is not losing that championship anytime soon, but you want to see Finn Balor and Seth Rollins go at it. They click, they gel, they really, really have chemistry. And that's the most important thing with a match, chemistry. You look over the years, people who have had matches that you never even expected it to turn out to be like, I don't want to use star ratings, but you look at some people who have worked together in the past and you're left with, wow, this was fucking great. I want to see more of it. I definitely need to see more of it. you know, that's because some people just have amazing chemistry. And Seth Rollins and Finn Balor have that. And when people want to see the bouts, want to see the matches, want to see the brawling, even though you pretty much know who the victor is going to be, that says a lot. That's why Roman Reigns is so heavily praised, because most of Roman Reigns' run, 1,000-plus days as champion, it was never many opportunities where you really, truly felt that he would lose the championship. I think in some moments, Brock Lesnar, for some, Drew McIntyre, I honestly thought at one point Drew McIntyre was going to win it at Clash at the Castle. It just seemed like an amazing moment. Some people thought Sami Zayn for Elimination Chamber. But for the majority of Roman Reigns' run, you know, there was never really that major, 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 long extended threat that he was losing that championship. And it's kind of stabilized now, even though a lot of people really don't want to wait until WrestleMania 40, but, you know, you got to accept it because we don't make the decisions. But Seth Rollins and Bron Breakker was an excellent match yesterday. In a couple of weeks, we're having a little bit of a tease with Raw Underground returning and NXT. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But before we go any further, I want to talk about the AEW Collision rating. Now, if you followed my shows over the last 10 days, my original prediction for the rating was 840,000 viewers. Then I started thinking, you know what, maybe upper sevens. And then on Monday, I said, I'll stick with the 840. AEW Collision, for its debut show on June 17th, did 816,000 viewers. Pretty close, pretty close. But I'll tell you something that's even more interesting. They had no Big Bang Theory lead-in. They had no special lead-in. So the first quarter is very consistent to the last quarter. So the interesting thing about it is, you know, with the Big Bang Theory, that first quarter hour for Dynamite is usually like 1 million to 1.1 million. The opening quarter for Collision, which was CM Punk's promo, that quarter did 868,000 viewers. If you pretend that you had the Big Bang Theory lead-in and that opening quarter would have been 1,068,000 instead of 868,000, you know what their rating would have been for the night? 841,000. That goes to show you that when you get that Big Bang Theory lead-in, your overall rating goes up 25 to 40,000 viewers. Big difference when you say 815 or 850. So that's why that first quarter hour, I don't like to really factor in when we do ratings every week on Monday nights, because it does skew the overall rating more than you realize. But I will say this. I said it a week and a half ago. I said it on last Thursday's preview of Collision. I'll say it again here now. 700,000-800,000 on a Saturday night is definitely a success. As long as they don't go into the fives or the sixes, if they stay 700s and above, that's a success. Believe me when I tell you, I know that doesn't sound like a major number, but that is definitely considered a success for Saturday night under the circumstances. And, you know, AEW is not the must-see TV it used to be, you know, because we talk about it every week. You know, what fans have gotten used to is that every week there's got to be a surprise. There's got to be dessert. There's got to be a special stipulation. Every week there's got to be some type of deal like Falls Count Anywhere or a cage match or weapons match or with regards to this week's Dynamite, a concession brawl. Like there's got to be lights out, lights on, somebody shows up. There's got to be a surprise. There's got to be an announcement. Everything has to have a toy surprise. And the funny thing is, I compared AEW's programming last night on Patreon to my wife's dogs, her three Yorkies. And I'll be really quick with this comparison. I met my wife about 11 years ago. And I was dating her for a couple of weeks, and I went over her house for the first time, and I saw her dogs for the first time. Cute little Yorkie. She's got three of them. They're still all alive. They're doing well, thank God. And while I was there, she says, I got to feed them. I said, okay. So she takes out these pellets, these very, you know, like good quality dog food pellets. And she puts them in a plate, and she's adding some hot water to it to give it like a little gravy. And it's like, okay, it's fine. You know, it's good food for a dog. So then she starts taking American cheese. And I'm not exaggerating. This is not a lie, everyone. I'll never do a show again if I'm lying. She takes American cheese, and she starts breaking it into little pieces and sprinkling it on top of the kibble. Then she cooks a couple of slices of bacon, and she breaks it up into little pieces and mix it up in the food too. And then she puts it down, and the dogs eat. And I looked at it, and I said to her, I said, you know, why are you mixing in cheese and bacon with this healthy dog food? And she said, because my dogs won't eat the dry food without it. And, you know, me, you know, I have the common sense mindset to think that, okay, if a dog is hungry enough, it's going to eat the food that you buy for them. Of course, you have to experiment and see what food they like and don't like. But the point I'm making is that instead of her having the dogs get used to the food that she bought and is supposed to feed them, she had to add extra treats to it. She had to sprinkle, you know, biscuits on top, bacon, cheese. Like, you had to add all this extra stuff just to get them to eat. And that's a lot of what has happened with Dynamite. You can't just put out a plate of food. You have to add treats. You have to add desserts. You have to add surprise. You have to add this. And that's how you get people. You just put on a basic show. And, you know, a lot of people also feel that, you know, the 8-16 number is a decent number. But what does that rating look like 2 weeks from now, 4 weeks from now? My honest prediction, and listen, I'm recording half of this show before Dynamite airs tonight. Fact, there's a possibility I may not even watch Dynamite tonight, but I'll obviously have the results to share with everyone. But let me make this point. CM Punk is backstage at Dynamite. The Young Bucks and Kenny Omega are not. And that was Tony Khan's call. Tony Khan told Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks, look, we have Forbidden Door this weekend. CM Punk is going to, we're bringing him in. And maybe it's better, you know, for now that you guys aren't here. Okay, so they're not there. They did pre-recorded segments. Okay, fine. But here's my point. Remember all of that emotional clickbait that all those people gave you about hard roster splits. Then it was soft roster splits. Then it was that the people that are fine with Punk or indifferent with Punk, they would work the Saturday shows, and the ones who are anti-Punk will work the Wednesday shows. And now tonight, you have CM Punk already at Dynamite. Dave Meltzer today had to do what we just ripped about with Wade Keller. Dave Meltzer goes publicly today and says, you know, I talked to people today on the AEW roster, and they were told that CM Punk would not be appearing on Wednesday nights, and here he is, the first Wednesday he's back. I'm fine with CM Punk there tonight. I said all along that if Tony Khan and AEW thinks that they need a boost for a Wednesday, you best damn believe you're going to have wrestlers from Saturday show up. Anybody that thought otherwise was either just trying to get you to click on their shit, or they're just the dumbest motherfuckers in the world. But here's my point. Understand that Collision, Dynamite, Rampage, Ring of Honor are all under the same banner. It's all run by Tony Khan. Tony Khan's footprint is all over it. So what makes anybody in their right mind think that if Collision starts getting crappy numbers, that Tony Khan is not going to start doing the same antics that he does on Dynamite on Collision? People truly think that that's not going to happen. It already has. You have Buddy Matthews versus Andrade, which was an excellent match, and then they tease the handshake after, and the lights go out. And they come back on and the House of Black are in there. They attack him. The lights go out again. And we never see anything again after that. You realize that a lot of what Tony Khan believes is what AEW should be, with the surprise, the cake and ice cream, these little nuances. For anybody to think that Collision was going to be a totally different show is either fooling themselves, trying to kiss people's asses online to be part of a movement, to feel, you know, part of a clique, maybe to get a little job, maybe to get a little rub, maybe to get a little, you know, something. But at the end of the day, and I said this on the preview last Thursday, Collision may end up turning into AEW Dynamite Light or AEW Rampage on steroids. We already had Hobbs and Ricky Starks. We think they're going to be the two of the focal points on Collision, and they do a pre-recorded segment that they're going to be part of the Owen Hart tournament. I mean, does that really help their careers or give them any sense of a push? Even if one of them wins the Owen Hart tournament, where does that go from here? It's about weekly perception. You look at Wardlow. I'm convinced that Wardlow is either leaving that company soon or they have him set up to feud with somebody else big, maybe MJF. And that's why they made the move and he lost the championship to Luchasaurus. You know, the guy is too good to be held back like this. But when you see this for 6 months, a year, 2 years, and shit ain't changing. You know, when Hobbs won the TNT championship, a lot of us were like, finally. They're finally giving this guy the opportunity that he should have gotten maybe a year, year and a half ago. And what happens? Within 2 weeks, his vintage Cutlass gets destroyed and he loses his title. And he literally disappears. You know, so when do you take a step back and say, okay, this is the mindset, this is the foundation, this is the footprint, this is part of the overall schematics of AEW. If Collision ends up being dramatically different, and in some people's eyes is dramatically better, then you got to ask yourself, why, if they could do so good on a Saturday, why can't they do that in a different way on a Wednesday? At the end of the day, you fall into what you believe is what's best for business. That's why you already have CM Punk backstage at Dynamite. That's why you already see elements of Dynamite and Rampage on Collision. And I want to see what happens a couple of weeks from now. Now, I will say again, I said it over the weekend, I'll say it again here, I thought Collision was very solid. I ranked it 8.5 out of 10. A great debut. Where does it go from here? I mean, the two storylines that came out of there, more than anything, is that CM Punk still has his championship, and we're going to end up having MJF versus him title for title. I think that's absolutely coming. And then you have Andrade possibly teaming up with two other people, a few with the House of Black. I'm happy that Andrade's back. I'm happy that Miro's back. But it feels like what they did on Collision, they could have done on Dynamite. And then what happens a week from now, 2 weeks from now? And they start, you know, oh, so-and-so's in action. You know, that's why a lot of the ticket sales in Canada were doing so awful. I said 2 weeks ago that once CM Punk returns and once people see what this roster is really going to look like for Collision, they start painting the picture of, you know, possible matches, a possible future, you'll see people buy tickets. You know, they just don't want to spend hundreds and hundreds of dollars Canadian and not even know who's going to be on the card. You know, just because you have thumbnails of people, you know, people in the thumbnails doesn't mean they're going to appear. There were quite a few people that were on the original thumbnail that did not appear for the Collision debut. And please do not say to me, well, they had to put some of those people on there because CM Punk wasn't officially announced yet. No, they put quite a few people on that thumbnail that did not appear. And, you know, and while I'm doing this, no BS. Right now it's literally 6:30 in the evening on Wednesday, and Dana Brooke is trending. I'm not kidding. Dana Brooke is trending. And as soon as I click on it, this is what I see on the posts. Is there a reason why Dana Brooke gets so much hate on here? What have I missed? I really don't understand the unwarranted Dana Brooke hate. You're talking about someone who stays in her own business and tries to be better at her craft. That woman literally doesn't complain and does any and everything that company throws at her. It's very weird. Where are my Dana Brooke fans at? I felt like Dana Brooke was the wrong choice to send to NXT in the first place. And Mickey James said that on Busted Open. Wow, that is interesting. Let's see what the reaction is to that. Oh, yeah, here we go. And if you think I'm kidding, look it up. OU, this was, I don't know. She says, I love Mickey, but that is not a fair assessment. If Dana could do all the moves that she's talking about and more, it's just a little weird that I don't see anyone talking about Cora Jade's wrestling moves in the match. Hey, nitwit, Cora Jade is still growing. NXT is developmental. Dana Brooke should have worked like this 10 years ago. And then it goes on and on. I agree. I get where Mickey is coming from, and I'm no one to disagree with a pro, but I could respectfully do. I hate the reaction she's gotten. I truly believe this could catapult Dane to another level if she rises up and switches. Oh, my God. Sometimes you just can't improve. I've said it, you could have someone who is a lifetime 250 batter in the minor leagues. They go to the major leagues and can't hit no more than 200. You bring them back to the minor leagues and they just bat 250. No matter how many hours you're in the batting cage, no matter how many practice hoops you make, no matter how many hours you spend on the ice shooting the puck, no matter how many hours you throw that football, doesn't make you a star. And again, she's got a fan base. I totally get it. But there are some people out there. Again, a lot of these people are the same mentality that, oh, they should have given Zelina Vega the women's championship. It would have been the perfect way for her to finish her match in Puerto Rico. Now you understand how stupid that sounds. Remember with Gunther, you're like, oh, Mustafa Ali should have beaten Gunther in Saudi Arabia. Let that sink in a little bit. And I like both of them. I like Zelina Vega. I like Mustafa Ali. And by the way, Mustafa Ali was great. Was absolutely great on NXT as the special guest referee for Tyler Bate versus Wesley. When we get into results in a little bit, I'll tell you something that they should have done with Mustafa Ali yesterday that would have been awesome, but WWE did not do it. But let me just say one last thing about the collision rating from Saturday, because this is definitely a positive. One thing that Collision was successful to do was maintain their viewers for pretty much the whole show. You did at one point have a little over 100,000 viewers lower than what they opened up with, but consistently the entire night, fans pretty much stood tuned in. The opening quarter, which was CM Punk's promo and the beginning of Luchasaurus versus Wardlow, that opening quarter did 868,000 viewers. Wardlow versus Luchasaurus, and then Powerhouse Hobbs's announcement that he was going to be in the Owen Hart tournament when he was talking to Lexi Nair, that quarter hour dropped from 868 to 828, so a 40,000 viewership drop. Andrade versus Buddy Matthews, that dropped another 55,000 viewers. So we go from 828 to 773. Now, you look at it overall, we're almost down 100,000 viewers within 20 minutes. But as Andrade and Buddy Matthews' match continued, and it really started turning into a beautiful work of art, that rating rebounded and jumped back up to 835,000 viewers. Then the beginning of hour two, which they showed a little bit more of CM Punk and his upcoming match. Then you had the women's tag match. Then Ricky Starks announcing that he was going to be in the Owen Hart tournament. That quarter dropped from 835 to 813. Jeff Jarrett, you know, the announcement that he was going to be facing Mark Briscoe on Dynamite in a concession brawl, and he acclaimed in the ring doing the scissor stuff, that dropped almost 60,000 viewers. 756,000, the lowest quarter of the night. But then we get to the main event. The main event took up the last two quarters of the night. FTR and CM Punk defeating Juice Robinson, Jay White, and Samoa Joe. The final two quarters jumped from 756 to 823, and the very final 15 minutes of that match, 834. So they started with 868. They ended with 834. Very, very consistent for the night. Honestly, 816,000 viewers, I consider that a success. I know some people are going to feel that it should have been higher. You know, fine, granted. But you got to think a little bit realistic here. You know, CM Punk's return is excellent, but, you know, it's not earth-shattering like it was, you know, a couple of years ago when he was out of the business for, what, 7 years? Whatever number of years it was. Plus, remember this, there's a lot of people who seem to forget about it already. You had a lot of elements of the media and the elite, the Young Bucks and others, doing their damnedest to diminish CM Punk's value in AEW, make him look toxic. So not all AEW fans are happy that he is back. And, you know, they're in Chicago for Dynamite tonight. So you know CM Punk, if he comes out there, his reaction is going to be excellent. And what happens afterwards? Personally, I think his reaction will continue to be positive, especially because when you think about it, most of his advertised appearances will be Collision. So fans that are buying tickets, believe, there ain't nobody out there that is going to buy, pay that kind of money to see Collision, and their intention is just to shit on CM Punk. Now, you can boo CM Punk if you just think he should be a heel or you don't, you know, like his work, but you're not going to see people that are going to spend money just say, oh, I can't wait to go there and fucking curse out CM Punk and give him a piece of my mind. No, you're going there because you want to enjoy a two-hour night of wrestling, and even more when you realize all the matches are being taped too. You know, you look at anybody who's ever been a major heel, even Roman Reigns right now. I don't want to compare Roman Reigns to CM Punk, but Roman Reigns is a heel right now. And, you know, people still want to go and see him perform and see other people perform. So, you know, the fans know what they're going to get with Collision now as far as who's going to be on there. Not everybody's going to be on there every week. And they got to be really careful with that. They can't do what they did on Dynamite where somebody appears and then they don't wrestle for 3 weeks. And then when they try to cover it up, they have a backstage pre-recorded segment for 2 weeks in a row. You know, it's you start doing that with Miro and others, you will have people complaining immediately. What the fuck? Why is this person only wrestling once every 3 weeks? I know when it comes to Reigns and others, you know, that's the case too. Not everybody's going to perform every single week like Seth Rollins, but you got to set the stage, set the tone from the beginning. And if they fall into those same Dynamite and Rampage habits, people are going to jump all over it. Other people are going to act like it's not there. Some people out there that got to get the hand job or give it or take it, they're going to just look the other way and not even comment about it. Pretend like everything is amazing, epic, unbelievable. So, but props to Collision. Very good rating. Expected it to be around that. And let's see where it goes from here. So NXT Gold Rush, night one. Just some quick match results. Wesley retained the NXT North American Championship. Mustafa Ali, special guest referee. Mustafa Ali was doing antics during this match. At some points, doing a really fast count. Some points, you know, a little bit lackadaisical. At one point, he's slapping around Wesley. You're the North American champion. Go in there and fight. And then he goes to Tyler Bates, starts slapping him around. You're fighting for the NXT North America Championship. Get in and fight. And Mustafa Ali was getting under the skin of everyone. Me, the only thing I would have done different yesterday is I would have had Mustafa Ali from the beginning, from a week or two ago, act like he doesn't care all that much about NXT. Like, they could have said that WWE sent him here to, you know, referee this match or, you know, to however they could have set it up, but he could have just acted like he doesn't take NXT seriously. And then when he stood and refereeing yesterday too, I don't want to be here. I'm busy, you know, looking at my nails or talking to somebody at ringside. You know, just like act like you don't want to be there. Then you end up having a match against against Wesley. Wesley beats you. Competitive match will still defeat you. And then storyline-wise, Mustafa Ali realizes, you know what? These guys in NXT are legit. That's what I would have done. I thought that would have been a hell of a lot of fun. The pep rally for Thea Hale yesterday. I like Thea Hale. I absolutely have always rooted for her. It's amazing, you know, how much of a spitfire she is. And yes, she's only 19 years old, and she's getting a title shot against Tiffany Stratton. But you watched this segment yesterday, and you know what the outcome is going to be. You know, this is not even like Mikey Whipwreck stuff from 1995 or 94. You root for her. She's energetic. She loves being a wrestler. That's enough reason to be behind her in this. But the way to start off Tiffany Stratton's run this way, it just feels like, I don't know, it just feels something lacking, terrible. And Tiffany Stratton, she was okay with her back and forth yesterday and, you know, but something is missing and missing dearly. Now, they're still playing around with NXT Anonymous. And I started thinking yesterday, who would be a perfect person to be NXT Anonymous? Basically, it's somebody who's stalking and recording people without them knowing. And yesterday, Lyra Vicaria and JC Jane had a little bit of a discussion, and then Lyra left and JC Jane had a couple of, you know, she's talking out loud, which is goofy in itself, but you have to do that in order to make the point come across. JC Jane don't like her, but NXT Anonymous is recording somewhere in the room. I started thinking that whoever this person is a kind of a stalker. They should bring Nikki Cross into NXT. Nikki Cross, unfortunately, that is someone who they've given a lot of opportunities on the main roster. They did the superhero thing. They did the crazy thing. They don't want her to turn into a psycho because of, obviously, you know, politically correct reasons. We thought Sanity was going to be returning. If Sanity is still going to return, have Sanity return on NXT and have Sanity feud with Gallus. I think that would be excellent. So it's just an idea. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but I hope it does. Idris Inofi and Malik Blade defeat Josh Briggs and Brooks Jensen and Hank Walker and Tank Ledger to become the number one contenders for the tag titles. So Malik Blade and Idris Inofi will take on Gallus next week. As I said earlier, Cora Jade beat Dana Brooke by ref stoppage. Don't need to say anything else there. Lash Legend and Jakara Jackson versus Valentina Feroz and Yulisa Leon. That was okay. You know, in the end, Lash Legend and Jakara Jackson, you know, they obviously just they look a little bit better. I personally think Valentina Feroz and Yulisa Leon, they have a little bit more work to do. But what was interesting about this match is while the match is going on, we see around ringside Lola Vice and Electra Lopez. And Lola Vice, man, she is the sleeper that everybody wants to see become a star. I mean, we joked on Patreon a couple of times, and she's got an amazing body, her outfits, and she's picking this wrestling up really, really nicely. So it's going to be really interesting to see how quickly she puts it all together. But so far, I'm in with her work. There's something interesting going on there. She's really putting in the hours. I don't think a lot of people thought that she would be able to put it together. Some people, I guarantee you, especially her background, you know her background. I think within no time, yes, Ronda Rousey has the bigger star value. You know, she's a major star in the sports world and recognizable name. But I have a feeling within a year, you're going to have people saying that Lola Vice has picked up the pro wrestling in-ring work better than Ronda Rousey has. Do I agree with it? I don't know. But definitely something to think about. That's going to start coming out, I'm telling you. And Seth Rollins retains the World Heavyweight Championship, defeating Bron Breakker. Rollins taped up around the ribs and was selling the ribs throughout the whole match. The match, you know, like I said earlier, was it pay-per-view or premium live event quality? No. What is it, a strong main event for TV? Yes. Bron Breakker showed that he belongs. And if he goes to the main roster, I think he is ready. That doesn't mean that he's not going to get even better and better and better. I think he's at the point where you can graduate him to the main roster. They put on a great performance yesterday. Seth Rollins with a pair of curb stomps to get the win. After the match was over, Seth Rollins is jumped by Finn Balor. Finn Balor beating the balls off of Seth Rollins. Carmelo Hayes, Trick Williams make the save. A lot of us were talking last night, you know what? Down the line, give us Finn Balor versus Carmelo Hayes. You know, that would be awesome. And you know what? Since I have it, I might as well share it because I think you would absolutely enjoy it. After NXT went off the air yesterday, Seth Rollins had a couple of words to tell the live NXT audience yesterday. And, you know, for anyone out there, you know, like I've already discussed this and most of you already understood it and know it. You know, the reason why you had Seth Rollins take on Bron Breakker in NXT and not on Raw is because Bron Breakker is not a fixture on Raw yet. So he's not going to get the emotional invested response by the fans who are live there. Rollins will get it. They'll serenade him until the next day. But Bron Breakker is still, you know, it's just like Janie McDonough on the main roster. It's just like Zoe Stark on the main roster. Zoe Stark putting Trish Stratus with her was a very smart idea because that gives Zoe Stark right now instant heat. But fans are now starting to appreciate Trish Stratus more, especially after the beating that she took against Raquel Rodriguez on Monday, even though Trish won the match. But by having the match in NXT, you got somebody going back to their roots, number one. Number two, that entire NXT building is so heavily invested with Bron Breakker over the last year and a half, 2 years, that you know that everybody in that building is going to get into it. They're around him every week. When he turned heel and called everybody scumbags, the fans are very, very vocal. And the atmosphere yesterday was a lot of fun. That atmosphere would have been loud for Seth on Raw, but it wouldn't, I don't believe, been anywhere near that way towards Bron Breakker. So after the match was over, after NXT went off the air, here's a couple of minutes of what Seth Rollins had to say to his fans.
Carmelo and Trick, baby, thank you guys. And look, I'm going to speak on that real quick. I'll tell you what. The reason I come down here to NXT and defend the World Heavyweight Championship is because I love this. And this title deserves that respect because there are champions like Harley Race, like Ric Flair, like Bret the Hitman Hart, like Mr. Five-Time Booker T. Who took pride in taking the heavyweight title to every city, in every town, in every single country they could, and putting on a fight to raise the prestige of a world heavyweight champion. And if I can even lace those boots for 2 seconds, if I can be a part of that lineage, then I'm doing something right. So thank you guys for giving me the opportunity. Booker T, Shawn Michaels, everybody who's held a title like this before me, thank you guys for giving me the opportunity to fill your shoes. But now I want to tell you guys just a little story. You got a few minutes? So, when I... yeah! When I was asked by Bron Breakker to come down here and defend my title on NXT, and I accepted, I had a lot of people asking me, Seth, does it feel nostalgic? Are you getting emotional? And to be honest with you, guys, it had been so long since I'd stepped foot in an NXT ring, and I've been fortunate enough to do so much all across the world that my honest answer was no. It wasn't hitting me like I thought it would until I got out here. And that right there, all of you, you guys embody the same energy that I left NXT with a decade ago. You guys are still the proving ground for every single person back there in the back. You guys and your vitality, your love, your energy is what has made me a visionary. It is what has made me a revolutionary. It is what has made me...
A really fun night yesterday with Seth Rollins. Not only was it a good match and a great rub for Bron Breakker, nice little present for the NXT audience, Seth Rollins going back to his roots, but it just shows you how much of a workhorse and how dedicated Seth Rollins is to bring that title up to the value that it should. And he's doing a great job so far. I cannot knock that. Even if you're not a Seth Rollins fan, I think you have to admit that. Yesterday, Carmelo Hayes had a back and forth with Baron Corbin, and Corbin got a lot of praise yesterday, including from me as well. And recently, Corbin did an interview and said he would welcome bringing back the Lone Wolf character. And I personally think that the reason why they're still doing the Happy Corbin thing and he is still doing what he's doing in that gimmick is because that truly reflects him. I really believe that. When he made that remark about, you know, welcoming the, he'd do the Lone Wolf again, you know, if asked, I think it's just his way in that interview just saying, look, whatever WWE wants me to do, I'll do. But I've always said that when you get the opportunity to cut an important promo and it's based on reality, it always seems to flow better. It sounds better. It's more believable because it is based on reality. When he was talking to Carmelo Hayes yesterday and said, when I win that championship, I'm going to take it, go into my Porsche, drive back to my $1.8 million house, put it on my mantle, have my hot wife pour me a drink that you can't afford. That's Corbin in his real life. I'm telling you, years ago when he first got to the main roster and I was going back and forth with him and a few other people as well, his way of putting it in all our faces back then was just sending us a picture of his car keys. Like, look what I got and look what you don't have. And that is Corbin. What you saw yesterday is probably the biggest reflection of what Corbin is outside of wrestling, as far as his money and, you know, what he has is worth. But I also hear that Corbin actually is pretty cool outside of wrestling. So, you know, the character is obviously him times 10. But that worked very well yesterday. But the segment that probably hit me the most yesterday. No, it's not Raw Underground. Yeah, we are going to get a little bit of Raw Underground coming back because in 2 weeks we have Damon Kemp is going to be taking on Javier Bernal. And we had a little cameo yesterday from Gable Steveson, which was interesting because very recently there were all these reports that we're not going to see Gable Steveson on TV anytime soon. And you know what? I think those people were right to an extent because all of the college websites were talking about this a couple of days ago, that Gable Steveson plans to use his final year of NCAA eligibility. He wants to wrestle and be in college next year. That he is going to return to NCAA competition next year. So if he does that, his WWE career is going to be put on hold for another year. Absolutely. But yesterday we saw him in a cameo anyway, basically saying to Javier Bernal, look, if anybody knows my brother, it's me. And yes, Damon Kemp is using a different name on camera. WWE acknowledged that they're both brothers. But, you know, we got a little cameo from Gable Steveson. Could it be a swerve in the end? Possibly. But it's going to be a Raw Underground match. And if anybody remembers Raw Underground early on with the COVID era, I loved it. I thought it was great. And you go back and you look at some of that Raw Underground, some people were bringing back some of the clips. Totally forgot that JC Jane was in a segment. I do remember Ivy Nile and Shayna Baszler. That was a segment. You know, there's some moments of Raw Underground that I think a lot of people forgot that was a lot of fun. So that's going to be interesting to see if that sticks around. I personally don't think so. You're not going to, you know, to me it's just putting a major detour on some people's NXT development by having them just work Raw Underground. Maybe you could do it once in a while, but, you know, there's a lot of people, I think, in a way jumping the gun last night. Oh, Raw Underground's coming back. It's going to come back. I think it might just be for a night. So let's take a wait-and-see approach with that. But yesterday, the segment that really got me big time was Von Wagner. I had no idea what Von Wagner went through as an infant. A lot of you know the storyline with Von Wagner with therapy and, you know, the shit that's going on with NXT right now. And, you know, I'm not going to lie, the only thing I didn't like about the segment yesterday was maybe some of the acting from Robert Stone. And I want to be really careful when I say it that way, because Robert Stone is legitimately a father. And Robert Stone was legitimately taken back by what Von Wagner said yesterday. For some reason, it just felt like there was added emotional, physical reactions that just felt more of like a skit in a segment instead of just two guys having some real deep conversation. If you watch a segment, you'll know what I'm talking about. Just look at Robert Stone's reactions to everything. You could see that he was legitimately reacting, but it felt like it was enhanced a little bit too much for TV purposes. But, you know, Von Wagner is the son of Wayne Bloom, which I know some of you remember from, you know, his WWE career in the 90s. Not very, very good, if you remember. But, you know, when they were the Destruction Crew, I thought they were fine. When they came to the WWE as the Beverly Brothers, it never clicked. But Von Wagner told a story yesterday that just blew me away. And just to summarize it, that when he was born, he had a disorder that affected the development of his brain. And they had to do surgery on him when he was like a year and a half old. And they literally cut his skull open from ear to ear and pulled down his face. And he had this major surgery that they didn't think he was going to make it. And they're showing pictures of him as an infant with staples and stitches from ear to ear. And you see a picture of Wayne Bloom with, you know, with Von Wagner. And I'm just silent and I'm frozen and I'm looking at this and I'm like, holy shit. I can't believe that we didn't know this about Von Wagner before yesterday. And it was powerful. It was emotional. I was very curious to see social media's reaction yesterday. And I could honestly say probably 95% of the social media reaction was for the people that didn't like him before. Some of them may still not be interested in his character now, but they have a lot of respect for that guy. There was a lot of people that were not fans of Von Wagner that became a fan yesterday simply based on what he overcame. It is one of the most under valued segments that I've seen in wrestling in years. I mean, we've seen a lot of stories of stars that we see on TV that we never knew they went through when they were a kid, whether it's bullying or whatever it is. But to throw this on NXT yesterday, out of nowhere, and to see how unbelievable of a condition that this guy had as an infant, to think, not even 2 years old. And he's talking about going to school and everybody thought he was a freak. You know, he looked like a monster. I mean, how do you not want to root for this guy even more now? I was blown away from that segment yesterday. I had no idea, not an inkling. It is kind of unbelievable in this day and age that something to that magnitude was never covered in the wrestling news world. Even back, if you want to go back to the 90s when this happened, like, you never saw a news article about it. You never saw an interview, nothing. I mean, yes, I know some people can say, well, you know, it's really personal stuff and, you know, they didn't want it public. Usually something gets out there, even wrestlers that just mean well. You know, yes, we didn't have social media for the most part in the 90s. I mean, we had message boards and forums later on and chat rooms, but you didn't have any wrestlers in the business at the time. Hey, everybody, say a prayer for Wayne Bloom. You know, his kid, you know, newborn is going through a major surgery. Keep him in your prayer. Nothing. Nothing. If you didn't see that segment with Von Wagner yesterday, please go out of your way and tune in. I could play the audio right now, but honestly, it does no justice unless you see the pictures and the emotion. It does go right through the screen. It was one of the most powerful wrestling segments that I've seen in a very, very long time. Wow. Wow. And I'm not exaggerating. I was talking to people last night that were just blown away, speechless. No idea. No idea. So, next week, we have, for night two of NXT Gold Rush, Carmella Hayes will be defending the NXT Championship against Baron Corbin. Tiffany Stratton will be defending the NXT Women's Championship against Thea Hale. Gallus will be defending the NXT Tag Titles against Malik Blade and Idris Inofi. Nathan Frazier, with the NXT Heritage Cup, he is going to defend, I guess, the cup against Dragon Lee. And that was a fun segment yesterday with Seth Rollins and Nathan Frazier as well. Seth Rollins showing a little compliment, giving some compliments to Nathan Frazier. When Nathan Frazier first came up in the WWE training, Seth Rollins actually made some appearances, and there's a couple of vintage photos online that you could see that. So it's Nathan Frazier with a come full circle moment, which was very, very cool. And next week we have Gigi Dolin versus Kiana James. They did a segment with Gigi Dolin yesterday, out and about looking at art, you know, and how, you know, that reflects her persona and what you see and this and that. You know, they're trying. Ever since they split Gigi Dolin and JC Jane, to me, neither one has been able to really break out. And you feel like something is holding back Gigi Dolin from taking it to the next level. Maybe just the whole toxic attraction splitting up just emotionally wiped them out. And that's not as crazy as it sounds. You know, of course, it's storyline, and of course, it's WWE's decision. But let me tell you something. Those three women, yeah, Mandy Rose got released. I still think she's going to be coming back sooner than later. But, you know, those three women working together for a good year, you get close. You get very close with the people that you work with. And I think that closeness, you know, is nowhere near what it used to be because of, you know, where they are in the world of pro wrestling. In case of Mandy Rose, not even in pro wrestling right now. So that's the preview for next week. And then the following week, like I said, we got that Raw Underground idea with Damon Kemp and Javier Bernal. So we'll see what happens there. Okay, this is part two of your Wednesday Night Dynamite episode. It is still June 21st, but a little bit later in the evening. AEW Dynamite just went off the air. And I tell you, it was a fun show, but there was a lot to absorb, a lot to digest. Honestly, it was a hot fucking mess. It made Raw seem normal. This was a hot mess. I will get into it, and hopefully I will organize this as best as I possibly could. But a couple of things, very, very noticeable, came out of this episode of Dynamite. And one is something that you're not going to hear much online. It is not a popular topic to discuss right now. And people are going to intentionally, blatantly avoid it until it's something that is so noticeable and so obvious, then they'll have no choice. And that's something that I talked about on my AEW Collision debut preview show, which was on June 15th. It was something that I discussed this past Sunday, the 18th, on the sit-down. And that although people want to perceive Collision to be a totally different style of show to Dynamite, people were trying to sell you for months that it was going to be a hard split, two different rosters, which made no sense. It never made sense. It never was going to happen. It was two touring groups. And then you would see same wrestlers appearing on both shows. CM Punk already appeared on Dynamite tonight. And when we get through with what is scheduled for Saturday's Collision, it's already happened. I never in a million years thought it would happen this quickly, but Collision is already AEW Dynamite 2.0. I'm not saying that's a bad thing. Let me make this clear. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. But everything that everybody was trying to convince you what Collision was going to be, they were 100% wrong. It's mind-boggling how people could get it so wrong for so often, and somehow they get a pass for it. It's kind of crazy when you think about it. Another thing that came out of tonight's Dynamite, 7 additional matches were added to Forbidden Door. Not 7 total, 7 additional matches tonight. Forbidden Door is less than 4 days away, and you add 7 more matches? That is sloppy. That is a hot mess. Some of these matches, in my opinion, do not belong on a pay-per-view. We'll get into them, absolutely. But thank God that I decided I'm not doing a recap or a review Sunday night. It's nothing against AEW. It's nothing against this pay-per-view. But I ain't staying up till 3 o'clock in the morning, the day before I got to go to work. I don't stay up till 3 o'clock in the morning and have sex. I certainly am not. This is just overloaded way too much. Reminds me of when I went to Disney, you know, and the food was really, really expensive, but they give you tons and tons of it. That's the justification. Oh, I don't want to spend $40 for a dinner, but they give you tons and tons of food. So you pay the money, but you get way too much. And this is way too much. Something else tonight, which is pretty interesting. The brackets for the Owen Hart tournament have been revealed. You know, right away I noticed no Canadians are in the tournament, but names noticeably absent. The air dates, the dates that these matches will go down, that in itself will pop a few blood vessels in your brain. I organized it. Hopefully, the way I discuss it, you'll get a good idea as far as what airs when. These tournaments seem very, very predictable. When I get into the matches, you'll see why. And then there was this blind tag team tournament that they're going to do. And everybody was wondering, like, what's this blind deal that AEW is going to do? Basically, in simple English, it's a lethal lottery. If you remember WCW's days with the lethal lottery, and listen, I'm not crapping on it because I've said for a very long time that I'd love to see WWE or AEW bring back the lethal lottery. I think it's fun to randomly pick names and have maybe some oddball tag teams. Unfortunately, AEW botched it big time tonight. All for a storyline, a hot fucking mess. When you think about the size of the AEW roster, And tonight, RJ City and Tony Schiavone is seen in the back with the looks, you know, like when they draw the daily numbers for the lottery. All the balls are supposedly inside, and they pick the first two balls tonight. And those first two names are going to be a tag team. What are the odds the first two names pulled are MJF and Adam Cole? If WWE did that and they used the whole roster and the first two names announced is Roman Reigns and Cody Rhodes, people would be like, that's awful. That's Vince McMahon all over it. I mean, not even try. Even better. Tonight, Orange Cassidy teamed up with Katsuyori Shibata, and they lost to Daniel Garcia and Zack Sabre Jr. What happened in the match was that Orange Cassidy was going to nail Zack Sabre Jr. with the orange punch, and he moved out of the way, and he inadvertently hit his tag team partner, Katsuyori Shibata. As a result, Garcia and Sabre Jr. get the win. Not even 5 seconds later, we find out from Excalibur that at Forbidden Door, those four men that just wrestled in a tag team match are going to fight each other for Orange Cassidy's international title. Not even 10 seconds went by. So the inadvertent punch to Shibata, and now, the tag team partners are going to go against each other of Forbidden Door. Everything is just rushed. Let's just get into the results tonight. I don't want to spend too much time on this, and there's a lot to, you know, get into. So let's run down the matches pretty quickly. The Guns defeated the undefeated Hardys. Yes, they made mention that the Hardys, as a tag team so far in AEW, were undefeated. I think they had 12 wins in a row, singular, as just the Hardys. Well, the Guns defeated the Hardys tonight due to interference by Juice Robinson. After the match is over, we have a post-match beatdown by Jay White, Juice Robinson, and the Guns, and then we get some saves. Ricky Starks tries to make the save. He starts getting his ass handed to him. FTR comes out, tries to make the save. They start getting their asses kicked because the numbers are still off. CM Punk hits the ring. No music. Hits the ring. Starts clearing house. So you got CM Punk, Ricky Starks, and FTR along with the Hardys. And you have the Guns, Juice Robinson, Jay White. And they all get out of Dodge. CM Punk, as Juice Robinson is about to leave the ring, tries to hit the GTS on Juice Robinson, but Juice Robinson is quickly pulled out of the ring. Loud CM Punk chants because they're in Chicago. And CM Punk gets on the mic and says, I'm not even supposed to be here. I'm a collision guy. And he issues the challenge for collision. The Guns, Jay White, and Juice Robinson versus FTR, Ricky Starks, and CM Punk. So that is your main event match for this coming collision. Okay. I don't have really any issue with that at all. Same wrestlers pretty much from the week before. Okay, if that's how you're establishing your roster, that's fine. We'll get into collision again very, very shortly. Unfortunately, a lot of people thought that this was a legit stipulation. Jeff Jarrett last week said that if he loses against Mark Briscoe, you will never see him in AEW ever again. Well, that was never made an official stipulation, everyone. And somehow tonight, Mark Briscoe did defeat Jeff Jarrett. This was the concession stand brawl, which about 5 minutes in ended up inside the ring. We had hot dogs, popcorn, ketchup, mustard being used. Lots of condiment jokes by Taz and Excalibur. We had a bunch of women behind a concession stand, and Jeff Jarrett and Mark Briscoe are brawling. And then we see one of those women who's wearing a face mask, one of those COVID face masks, starts squirting ketchup all over Mark Briscoe's face, and it's Karen Jarrett. So the crowd starts chanting, fuck you, Karen. But it was very, very light. Like, the, it was not a loud chant because, based on the acoustics, so they didn't censor it. So the crowd is giving it to Karen Jarrett. And then we get more masked interference. Mark Briscoe gets a little bit of offense on Jeff Jarrett, brings out a table, puts Jeff Jarrett on the table, and then Mark Briscoe grabs a ladder and starts climbing the ladder. He's going to dive off the ladder, put Jeff Jarrett to a table. When Mark Briscoe climbs and gets to the top of the ladder, another masked person shows up, pushes Mark Briscoe off the ladder. Jeff Jarrett gets out of dodge. Mark Briscoe goes for the table. Person on masks reveals themselves to be Sonjay Dutt. So now we go to commercial. And, you know, the brawl is fun. But for some reason, when we come back from commercial, they're back in the ring. You have Sonjay Dutt, Jay Lethal, and Jeff Jarrett beating down Mark Briscoe 3-on-1 in the ring. And then this is where it really falls off the rails. I mean, really falls off the rails. Sorry. It's fun for indie stuff. It's a clusterfuck, a boatload of fun. Dynamite, this was a hot mess. Jay Lethal is outside the ringside area, setting up a table. They're going to obviously plan on putting Mark Briscoe through the table. Another person shows up, confronts Jay Lethal, and it's Mark Briscoe's father, Papa Briscoe. He grabs Jay Lethal by the neck and chokeslams Jay Lethal through the table. Just picture this. Papa Briscoe then goes into the ring, and as Jeff Jarrett and Sonjay Dutt charge Papa Briscoe, he clotheslines them both. All right, you know, it's fun, it's sentimental, it just, it didn't look very good on TV. Karen Jarrett ends up low-blowing Papa Briscoe. Satnam Singh shows up and nails Mark Briscoe with a chokeslam. This leads to Christopher Daniels and Best Friends. They come out. They try to neutralize Satnam Singh. Then the Lucha Bros come out. Ray Phoenix hits Jeff Jarrett with a springboard splash, what'd I say? Tongue-tied. Penta hits Jeff Jarrett with a super kick, and Mark Briscoe with the fruit roll-up. And Mark Briscoe defeats Jeff Jarrett. Again, the stipulation was not a legit stipulation, so Jeff Jarrett isn't officially gone from AEW television. I have to word it that way. Next, we have a backstage segment with the Blackpool Combat Club, alongside Don Callis and Konosuke Takeshita. John Moxley issues a 5-on-5 challenge to the Elite at Forbidden Door. And it's going to be the Blackpool Combat Club and Takeshita, along with John Moxley's protege, Hota Umino. Those five challenged the Elite. Now, Kenny Omega already has a match at Forbidden Door, so now we're wondering, who's the five going to be for the Elite? Okay, hold that thought, because we find out later on who teams up with Hangman Page and the Young Bucks. Moxley then brings up Okada, the Rainmaker. Says Okada will have a nightmare on Sunday, thanks to the best wrestler of the world. Bryan Danielson gets on camera and says he challenges Okada to a face-to-face tonight, but he doesn't even think Okada's in the building. He says that when he steps in the ring with Bryan Danielson Sunday, he's going to prove that Okada's an amateur. And if Okada doesn't show up tonight, he will prove that he's a coward and he's an amateur. Keep that thought in your head. Chris Jericho, Sammy Guevara, and Minoru Suzuki defeat AR Fox, Darius Martin, and Action Andretti. This was a fun match, but it was a match where everybody gets a chance to hit their moves. If you remember, like, old X Division stuff, this kind of felt like an old X Division match where everybody, like, with no sell each other's finishers and, you know, big time moves and just then hit their own. That's what this match was tonight. But it does finish with Chris Jericho putting the Lion Tamer on Darius Martin. So right after the match, here comes Renee Paquette, and you have Minoru Suzuki, Sammy Guevara, and Chris Jericho still in the ring. And Renee asks Chris Jericho, what was that moment like last week being in the ring face-to-face with Sting? And Chris Jericho's didn't really care about it. He's putting the bad mouth to Sting. He says, you know, you claim you're a hero to millions, but all you do is show up wherever the highest bidder is. He says, Sting, you're not a hero. You're a whore. And then Chris Jericho issues his Forbidden Door Challenge. Chris Jericho, Sammy Guevara, and Minoru Suzuki versus Sting, Darby Allin, and whoever they can get as a tag team partner. He continues to insult Sting a little bit. Sting's music hits. Sting hits the ring with Darby Allin. Sting says, we accept your lame challenge. And then Darby says, here comes the collision interaction. Darby Allin says, you've made a lot of enemies in a lot of places, Chris Jericho. Our tag team partner is someone who is one of your enemies. Chris Jericho is like, he wants to know who his tag team partner is. Darby Allin says, you will find out at AEW Collision. And you got groans from the crowd. I mean, they wanted the announcement tonight, obviously, but now we got Jericho, Sammy, Minoru Suzuki, Sting, Darby Allin, and now that bleeds into AEW Collision. Okay? We got that. We go to another backstage segment with the Young Bucks and Hangman Page. This was pre-recorded earlier in the day because they weren't there for tonight's taping. They're discussing who their two tag team partners are going to be because Kenny Omega already has a match. And Eddie Kingston shows up. Eddie Kingston says he doesn't like any of them, but he hates Claudio even more. So Eddie Kingston wants to be in the match, teaming up with the Young Bucks and Hangman Page on one condition. Eddie Kingston gets to choose who the fifth person is on the team. He walks off. Hangman Page and the Young Bucks are fine with it. And we go back to the ring. Adam Cole comes out. Cuts a promo, addresses the match from last week with MJF going to a time limit draw and demands MJF to bring his ass out there to discuss their rematch. MJF's music hits, comes out, gets on the mic, congratulates Adam Cole because somebody finally came out to play. He says that Adam Cole came back better than ever and MJF takes the credit for dragging that Adam Cole out of him. Kind of almost feels like the Seth Rollins Finn Balor storyline, right? So MJF's getting some loud asshole chants. MJF is worried about Adam Cole, who has had a lot of blows to the head in his career and has lost track of time. He lost track of time last week. MJF insists that he would have beaten Adam Cole if he had more time, and the crowd is chanting bullshit. And MJF says because he cares about Adam Cole, because he cares about his health and his well-being, MJF refuses to give Adam Cole a rematch. Tony Schiavone stands up and says, everybody, guys, I have an announcement. And obviously, you know, in sync, choreographed, at the very same time, MJF and Adam Cole both say, shut up, Schiavone. Kind of felt like when the Three Pillars came out there, and MJF says, who wants a rematch and all three of them at the same time? I do. So anyway, they tell Schiavone to shut up. And Schiavone says, oh, by the way, the first two names in this blind tag team tournament that he and RJ City pulled out earlier was MJF and Adam Cole. And Adam Cole is screaming, I'm not teaming up with him. I'm not teaming up with him. And then we see a little video from Tanahashi, cuts a promo that he's going to show up at Forbidden Door and he wants to challenge MJF for the AEW World Championship. MJF is mad and says that he is not facing Tanahashi at Forbidden Door. And, you know, a little goofy. Adam Cole accuses MJF of being a coward. The crowd starts chanting coward. And within about 10 seconds time, MJF accepts the match. You want the match? You got it. So MJF will be fighting Tanahashi at Forbidden Door. At this point for tonight's Dynamite, we now have the brackets for the ONR tournament. I will do this slow. There's not that many people. There's only 8 people in each tournament. But let me give you the brackets, and tell you where these matches will be happening, when these matches will be happening. For the women's side, on the left brackets, we have Britt Baker and Ruby Soho. They will be wrestling each other on next week's Dynamite, June 28th's Dynamite. They will face then the winner of Anna Jay and Sky Blue, who will be having their match on the June 23rd edition of Rampage. So whoever wins between Britt and Ruby will then later on, not the same night, but you know, upcoming weeks, will then face the winner of Anna Jay and Sky Blue to go to the finals. On the opposite side, we have Nyla Rose taking on Willow Nightingale. That match will take place this Saturday at Collision. And then the winner of that match will face the winner of Athena versus Billy Starks. And that match is going to take place at Forbidden Door. So on the right brackets, the winner of Nyla Rose and Willow will then take on the winner of Athena versus Billy Starks. So you almost kind of feel where this is going. Sky Blue may end up getting another, you know, upset victory. We'll probably have Britt Baker. You know, she'll possibly go on for a second year in a row to win the Owen Hart tournament. And then we'll probably, on the opposite side, end up with Athena versus Willow Nightingale. And Athena may end up going to the finals. That would be interesting, Britt Baker versus Athena. So now we get to the men's side. And this is where it seems rather predictable. I think it's pretty obvious that Powerhouse Hobbs or Ricky Starks is going to go to the finals, the way this is set up. On the men's side, you know, when I get into the match, I think you can figure out where this is going as well. On the left brackets, we have CM Punk taking on Satoshi Kojima. And their match will be taking place at Forbidden Door. So the Owen Hart tournament qualifier or tournament match will be at Forbidden Door between those two guys. So whoever wins that match, likely CM Punk, will then, in the future, face the winner of Roderick Strong versus Samoa Joe. And that match also takes place this Sunday's Forbidden Door. So for this Sunday's Forbidden Door, you got Punk and Kojima and Strong and Joe. So those two winners will, in the future, face each other. Now, on the right side of the brackets, you have Dustin Rhodes taking on Powerhouse Hobbs. And then the winner of that match will then face the winner of Juice Robinson versus Ricky Starks. And by the way, both of those tournament matches will take place on the June 29th edition of Forbidden Door. Not this Saturday, next Saturday. So that is your Owen Hart tournament brackets. As I said earlier, Daniel Garcia and Zack Sabre Jr. defeated Orange Cassidy and Katsuyori Shibata. After that match is over, we see Will Ospreay in the back. He's being interviewed, puts down Canada a little bit more. Don Callis shows up, and Don Callis says, look, you know, Will Ospreay's demanding security because he's worried about his safety after what he said about Canada, even though what he said is true. Don Callis offers him help because obviously Don Callis doesn't like Kenny Omega right now. So it looks like Don Callis may end up being in the corner of Will Ospreay at Forbidden Door. We then get another video package of Toni Storm and Willow Nightingale. And apparently Willow Nightingale is going to challenge Toni Storm for the women's championship. And their match is taking place at Forbidden Door. So we have Toni Storm, Willow Nightingale, Forbidden Door. Like I said, I'm not complaining about these matches, but some of these have no business being on Forbidden Door. Probably two or three of these matches that I'm mentioning tonight probably be on a pre-show. I just can't see some of these matches being on the main show. But Toni Storm will defend her women's championship against Willow Nightingale at Forbidden Door. Chris Statlander retains the TBS championship, defeating Taya Valkyrie. No heel turn tonight for Taya Valkyrie. It was a fun back-and-forth match. I got to be honest with you, and I'm not saying this to be, you know, like politically correct or controversial or outside the box. I actually thought Chris Statlander and Taya Valkyrie might have been the best match of the night. I don't get me wrong. The tag team match with Orange Cassidy and, yeah, that match, Shibata, that was entertaining. For some reason, maybe because, you know, the New Japan wrestlers, they're talented and everything, but I just don't follow them. I'm not interested in a lot of these guys. You know, some people online, they act like they watch them every day. And you know they probably only watch these people once or twice a year. I like the Chris Statlander and her work with Taya Valkyrie. I actually would like to see that as a rematch. The one thing I did find funny, and by the way, Statlander beat Taya Valkyrie with her tombstone finisher. After the match was over, I got a kick out of Excalibur saying that this was Chris Statlander's toughest match yet as TBS champion. And I'm saying to myself, wait a minute, she just won the fucking belt. What is this Matarazz talking about? But yeah. So those were your matches for tonight. So for Rampage this Friday, we have Chaos taking on the United Empire and Swerve Strickland. Now, I want to clear something up, because Swerve Strickland is wrestling on Rampage, and he's wrestling on Collision. And some people tonight were already saying, whoa, he's wrestling two nights in a row. Wow. No, Rampage is being taped tonight. Collision happens Saturday. So there's 3 days apart between the matches. So I just wanted to clear that up for anybody that might question that. So this Friday on Rampage, we have Chaos versus the United Empire and Swerve Strickland. The Acclaimed and Billy Gunn will be in action. Anna Jay will be taking on Sky Blue, as I said, the Owen Hart tournament match. And Doki will be taking on Jack Perry. Doki's from New Japan, by the way. For Collision, this Saturday, we will have CM Punk, FTR, and Ricky Starks teaming up to take on Jay White, Juice Robinson, and the Guns. Swerve Strickland will be taking on Hiroshi Tanahashi. Christian Cage will address the TNT Championship. Sting and Darby Allin will reveal their partner for Forbidden Door. We will have Nyla Rose versus Willow Nightingale in the Owen Hart tournament match. And Brody King will be taking on Andrade. So the closeout Dynamite tonight, Eddie Kingston is in the ring, and he put on a different shirt because obviously the shirt he had on didn't match, you know, what he had on earlier. So he puts on the shirt and he's cute on the mic. He's like, look, everybody, I just had surgery and ate a lot of ice cream, so he had to cover his tummy up a little bit. Eddie Kingston hints that Jon Moxley has a problem with him, that he's teaming up with the Young Bucks, but he hates Claudio that much. This proceeds to bring up Moxley. Comes out, goes in the ring, and is face-to-face with Eddie Kingston. Jon Moxley tells Eddie Kingston, is an old saying, if they stand behind you, protect them. If they stand beside you, respect them. If they stand behind you, destroy them. And he tells Eddie, you're drawing a fine line at Forbidden Door. And Eddie Kingston says, I love you, you're my brother, but you started teaming with that scumbag. And apparently Eddie Kingston wants Jon Moxley to admit something, and Moxley is basically keeping quiet. And Eddie Kingston, because we're rushed for time, Eddie Kingston is like, all right, well, if you're not going to say anything, I'm going to announce the fifth person on our team. And the fifth person that's going to team up with Hangman Page, the Young Bucks, and Eddie Kingston is going to be Tomohiro Ishii. And listen, I'm not saying anything bad about Tomohiro Ishii, but when I talked about that piped in, that reaction when somebody comes out and it's just like, holy shit reaction, you could tell that that was piped in tonight. Ishii comes out, and they're trying to portray it as this unbelievable, amazing, epic thing. And for the American wrestling fans, it's not. But obviously, this everything is on steroids with reactions with stuff like this. People online that don't even follow this guy, they'll write in big capital letters with emojis and, you know, just bold text. Holy fucking shit, LFG, blah, 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 blah. So Tomohiro Ishii comes out. And then the Blackpool Combat Club show up. They start beating down Eddie Kingston. They start beating down Tomohiro Ishii. Brian Danielson gets on the mic and baits Okada to come out. Okada's music hits. He comes out. He's in the ring face-to-face with Brian Danielson. Wheelie Yuta starts cheap-shotting Okada from behind. And Okada goes down, and Wheelie Yuta picks up Okada and holds him up so Brian Danielson could hit the psycho knee. The problem is that at the very last second, Okada moved out of the way, and Brian Danielson hit Wheelie Yuta with the psycho knee. So now Yuta is done. Okada clotheslines Yuta. Brian Danielson gets out of Dodge. He wants nothing of Okada tonight. And we go off the air. And that's your episode of Dynamite tonight. So, Forbidden Door, this is your lineup after tonight's Dynamite. They're advertising this as the main event, so this will probably be the match that goes off the air, which is very interesting, especially when you realize MJF has the heavyweight title. But Brian Danielson will be taking on Okada. We have Kenny Omega defending the IWGP United States Heavyweight Championship against Will Ospreay, with Don Callis likely in his corner. We'll have Sonata defending the IWGP Heavyweight Championship against Jungle Boy Jack Perry. Hook will be in his corner, by the way. MJF will defend the AEW World Championship against Hiroshi Tanahashi. We have Chris Jericho, Sammy Guevara, and Minoru Suzuki taking on Sting, Darby Allin, and a partner, which we will find out on this Saturday's Collision. John Moxley, Claudio Castagnoli, Wheelie Yuta, Kenosuke Takeshita, and Hota Umino, they will be taking on the Young Bucks, Hangman Page, Eddie Kingston, and Tomohiro Ishii. Orange Cassidy will be defending the International Championship, taking on Katsuyori Shibata, Daniel Garcia, and Zack Sabre Jr. in a four-way. Toni Storm will be defending the AEW Women's Championship against Willow Nightingale. And then we have three Owen Hart tournament matches. Athena versus Billy Starks, Roderick Strong versus Samoa Joe, and CM Punk versus Satoshi Kojima. That is what we have so far for Forbidden Door. Now, we can no longer say, let's see what happens on Rampage, because then we will have the final card sealed for after Rampage. But no, now we have Collision. So you can't go into Saturday anymore thinking, okay, now we have the card. Things are going to be added Saturday night, the night before Forbidden Door. So we're not going to know this complete full card probably until the early hours of Sunday. It is an overloaded show. I'm not saying it's a bad card, but it is lined up with some matches that honestly have no business being there. And when you realize they're adding more, because when you think of the fact that the Lucha Bros came out and you think of other people coming out, you almost feel like they're absolutely got to get a match somewhere on this card. But I will say this. The fact that it's Forbidden Door, and yes, there are some matches that are featuring only American wrestlers. But as far as the Jericho match, you know, they have Jericho, Minoru Suzuki, and Sammy Guevara. Whoever Sting and Darby Allin choose is going to be a Japanese wrestler. And it's probably somebody who can go at it with Minoru Suzuki. They tease that it's an enemy of Chris Jericho's. But it's going to be a New Japan wrestler that obviously has a history against Minoru Suzuki as well. Who that person is, it's late. I am not going to start dissecting that now. But it looks to be like a fun card. So for everyone out there that is going to check this out, enjoy it. I don't know if I'm going to actually watch it live. I will definitely skim through, you know, the matches afterwards. I'll probably see, you know, what everybody is talking about. And, you know, some of the matches that may not be all that much will probably bypass. I don't know. We'll see. But it is a loaded, loaded card. And then remember, next week we have Money in the Bank. And quick plug, even though, you know, Wednesdays we talk about everything but WWE, but don't forget, next Tuesday night, the 27th of June, Kevin Castle and yours truly will be teaming up once again for another edition of the Don Tony Show. Sorry, Force Abbott, everyone. The Don Tony and Kevin Castle Show. We will do preview and predictions of Money in the Bank. And the following week, probably that following Tuesday, we'll do a full show review. So that's something that you could look forward to. So, all right, so we're going to wrap this up. And I just want to say one thing in closing. Since I had a few hours to think about it, especially about the Dana Brooke stuff earlier, I want to make this clear. There's nothing personal whatsoever about Dana Brooke. She definitely comes across as a genuine, hardworking woman that really loves wrestling, has got the bug bit, and really wants to succeed. And I'm sure she has a boatload of friends within WWE that are going to come to bat for her and show support. And that's cool. That should happen. But in this world, we're not machines. In life, we could try over and over and over to do something, to work at it, to put in thousands of minutes, hundreds of hours, maybe thousands of hours, whether you want to become an actor, you know, a basketball player, baseball player, you could put in 10 times the work than the average person just because you put in the hours, just because it's in your heart, just because, you know, you get some opportunity. You're not entitled to it. If it doesn't succeed, you know, you're not owed anything. And this idea that because someone is a good person and because someone puts in so much time and because someone loves wrestling as much as Dana Brooke does, that she should be given a better chance and people should not be cruel. Again, I want to make this clear. This is something, I almost feel that some people in the wrestling business are intentionally ducking this point about NXT, which to me is the most important aspect of them all. I talked to a few people who were at the show and they said, the only reason why we booed the shit out of her out of the building is because we knew it was a bullshit work. The referee never called the match. They weren't doing it to make her cry. They weren't doing it to get under her skin, to hurt her feelings, to make her feel like shit, make her feel worthless. It wasn't good. And they knew what was coming and they didn't like it. And that's why they did what they did. They should not have to apologize. They should not have to feel guilty. And to me, this is ridiculous. She works hard. If she's that committed, there's got to be other roles that she could do within WWE or the world of pro wrestling where she you know, does what she does. I just personally think that people are taking what happened to Dana Brooke way too personal. And I don't think people are trying to hurt. You know, it becomes personal because if the fans crap her out of the building by the majority, that might give WWE more incentive. Like, look, we tried. We gave her too many years. We got to cut her. So that does affect her personally. I get it. But, you know, this is the business that she chose to be in. Other people have been released who were future stars that we look back and we're like, how the fuck you release this person? You didn't even give this person an opportunity. How do you release this person? So you don't see these people making these passionate pleas. You know, should we continue to give Lacey Evans opportunity? I guarantee you almost everyone out there that is going to bat for Dana Brooke a little bit over the top, if you replace her name with Lacey Evans, they have a whole different view about it. If people don't cut it, then unfortunately some will be cut. And that's the way it is. So again, it's nothing against Dana Brooke. I don't want to hurt her feelings. I wish her well. I wish it would get better. But when that many people for that many years say the same thing, you got to sometimes look in the mirror and say to yourself, you know what? Maybe I just can't put it together. I'm not made out for it. Indies, yes. Minor leagues, yes. You know, top of the top, WWE, maybe not. All right, everybody, I'm out of here. Much love. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Had a lot of fun putting it together. Definitely send your feedback. You know, as long as you keep showing support, spreading the word, tuning in, I'll keep banging these out. Be well, everybody. Talk to you soon.
Yes. That was cool. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. 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 Yeah.